Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode includes discussion about suicide. The National Alliance on Mental Illness is an organization that Sutton supports. I've included a link in the show notes. They are the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization. They are here to help. You are not alone.
I may not hold a center diamond, but a cup of coffee shines bright too.
If you listen closely, you can hear me not caring.
Wait, that was really good.
Thank you.
That was really good. I'm into it. I'm here for it.
Thank you.
You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode... And I am so excited to have a return guest. You know her as a content creator and podcaster who is one half of Real Moms of Bravo, but always giving
100%.
Always.
Welcome back to the podcast, Vanessa Rizzi. Vanessa, how are we?
I am doing well, Sarah. How are you? I'm so glad. I apologize. Definitely mom brain. We've been meaning to like make this happen. So I'm so happy that you are patient and that I'm back.
Listen, my total pleasure. And I also, we have to keep things extraordinarily real on the podcast today. So I was kind of like, you know, we're making plans. We're chatting. What's the pod going to be about? As you know, having been on Andy Scrolls before, I'm like, whatever, shooting the shit. Like maybe we'll dance in New York. We'll do a little tap soft shoe in Salt Lake. We'll talk some Potomac. We'll talk some Beverly Hills. And then I realized, oh my God, we're recording this on Wednesday. I was like, oh, day after Beverly Hills. So I messaged you having not watched Beverly Hills and said, why don't we like maybe do a little bit of a lens on BH because there's just been a lot going on, but I want to make sure, you know, we catch up on Beverly Hills. And then I just watched the episode and I cried and I cried and I cried. So I just said to you before we started recording, like, apologies in advance. I had no idea. Obviously, how intense the episode was going to be.
It's very intense. And I always sometimes, I'm so glad that it happened, though. I will say that. I'm so glad that we got to understand this side of Sutton. I so wish a lot of the times with Housewives that we kind of get that introduction when they first join in on the season. I mean, she may have not been ready to go there and unpack everything that she did unpack. But it's crazy. She's been on a couple seasons. And then you finally, if you like truly see her for who she is, the good, the bad, the ugly, and get a core understanding of Sutton Strack. I am like, oh, of course, like watching Reba, very much like, of course, you're the way you are. This explains so much to me. We've heard her talk about her dad before, but not in the level of detail that she went to in this episode. I just think, if anything, she has shown as humans that we're layered and nuanced and relationships are complicated.
Yeah. And sometimes we get that earlier in a housewife's journey or trajectory than we do perhaps with Sutton. But there is also a lot of value in finding out now. It's like this thing that I always say on Andy's Girls that I don't think really applies here, but spiritually maybe it's like a third cousin. Normalize changing your mind based on new information. It's not going to necessarily, if someone doesn't want to fuck with Sutton for probably very understandable reasons, that doesn't, this finding this stuff out about her history, her relationship with her mom, her relationship with her dad, her relationship with her dad's death, that doesn't require a person to change a possibly negative opinion of Sutton, but it does provide perspective. It's like it doesn't remove accountability from her behavior, but it does also say this person might actually be more complicated in a different way than had been presented. It's like this whole, you know, housewives as, you know, behind the fucking private gates or whatever. The way the show was first envisioned was like, here's what's actually going on behind these kind of like, oh my God, it's the 1% or someone going in debt to pretend to be the 1%, like living these fabulous lives. And there's a lot of humanity and pain behind that. And we're seeing that certainly come out.
Yes, I couldn't have. I think you summed it up completely with that assessment of Sutton and how it's very fair to kind of change or at least get an understanding of her. I think for me, what I saw and what I wasn't expecting from Sutton in this episode was little Sutton, like her inner child. Like, I mean, if you've ever done inner child work, I think watching her and the validation she so badly wants from her mother and how her mother raised her, I also find it crazy fascinating how cold Reba is and is a therapist in a way. Not, I don't know. My therapist is like so warm and fuzzy for me. And not all of them are like that, clearly. But I wasn't expecting a therapist to be have the difficulty of even saying I love you or saying I'm proud of you and not understanding why her child may want to hear that.
And rejecting the idea that communicating love is necessary. Like her feeling seems to be, you should know this. I don't need to prove it to you. Where it almost feels like for Reba, saying I love you is a test. Because what happens if she doesn't say it and you live in that context? Then I guess according to Reba's worldview or personal view, universe view, then that means the love doesn't exist. Or maybe it is something that obviously makes her uncomfortable and she doesn't understand why her daughter is asking her to live in discomfort. But I think Sutton's perspective is like, I need this thing. Like, can you please help me receive it? Which is why I thought the end of the episode was actually pretty meaningful. Where Sutton is saying, okay, if you don't have capacity to tell me you love me, can you please show me? And her mom saying, I'll go to California, I'll see your capsule collection, yada, yada. Like that was a moment where her mom, I felt like they were meeting halfway in a way that was really meaningful.
And I'm not sure if it weren't for the show that they would have gotten there in a weird way. It's like having the cameras, having Garcelle and Kyle support probably pushed this conversation that needed to happen so long ago. But I appreciate their support. I'm really curious on your perspective of this was in the previous episode, but it's still discussed a little bit in this episode. Was Garcelle talking to Reba and just saying, like, kind of bringing up everything we just discussed in terms of she wants you to be proud of her, she wants you to love her? Like, what was your take on that?
Well, I mean, my reaction was really focused on Reba's reaction, which was, that's really not any of your business. I think Garcelle handled that in a way with just so much more grace than I would have ever had. Because I just think, I don't think that I have the ability to mask emotion on my face. And I think I just would have been like gutturally a little horrified at somebody saying that. But I also understand her mom saying this and saying it maybe to Garcelle, but maybe also to production of like, I'm not doing this with you. But I think also, honestly, probably, as you said, if cameras weren't there, that conversation wouldn't be taking place. And a person could probably argue that if cameras weren't there, Reba would be a little bit zestier than she was in front of us. And I do also have to say, just for the record, because I said on an episode of Andy's Girls a couple episodes ago, I think with BBDB, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo, that I thought Reba was a therapist. And I don't even know if it was that episode or a different one. And whomever I was talking to, I think it was BBDB, or somebody was like, oh, she is. And I Googled it and motherfucking Google was like, she's a social worker, which is, you're still dealing with patience, there still is that conversation around like empathy and support, but that is not, I think, the work that Reba was actually doing. So then when they're talking about Reba's work as a therapist on this episode, I was like, well, motherfucking Google, I mean, aren't you supposed to be the law? Like, how we fucked that shit up?
I have no idea. Maybe it's evolved because she says she's still working I think she's still working. She's like 80 something. Maybe she eventually evolved and takes on patients in a different manner. I have no idea. I just was shocked to know that she was a therapist. And I don't know. You would think she would understand the things that her daughter is asking of her versus turning it around on like, well, I grew up in post-World War II. No one ever gave me that luxury. Sorry, kid. This is kind of how it is. It's just very, very fascinating. And the fact that you said that you brought this up, which is such a good point, is that she would be zestier if cameras weren't there. It's kind of terrifying because I found her terrifying. Kyle kept being like, your mom, I love her. I'm obsessed. I'm sitting there like, holy shit, that's your mom. Like, I have so much grace for you. I'm so sorry for the trauma that she's giving you because I'm experiencing it in the like 5 minutes I'm around her.
Yeah. And going off of Avi's behavior, although honestly, sidebar, Avi telling her she should maybe get dressed for brunch, I was like, sir, know thyself. Like, I don't think that's a path we really want to go down where we're suggesting that this lady do literally anything other than what she's presenting when it comes to her attire. But the woman who is like the caretaker of the home or something, Cheryl, her reaction, like fear and maybe a small amount of disgust at having to tell Reba it was time to come out of the house and like amble on over to the gals waiting for her, whatever. I mean, that was a little bit of a window into what this lady is like. And I can't help but think about Candace and her mom, her Candace's mom. Also, if I forget if she was a therapist or psychologist, but certainly working in the mental health field. And there being some real comparisons there, although obviously Candace's mom is younger than Reba. These two women, I'm sure, had very, very different generations, different experiences. Reba mentioning the World War II of it all was interesting to me because if I'm listening to the lady talk, I'm like listening to her chat. She's saying World War II. I'm like, okay, yeah, they came from a scarcity survival perspective. You could understand how a person was not necessarily available to communicate love, affection, support, whatever. But we don't want to normalize that. We don't want to set that as the tradition. BCC, intergenerational trauma. We don't want to say that's the way life should be lived. She can say that's how I lived. But like, sweetie, what are we doing?
I know. I was dying at Sutton's. I wish we got to see it actually versus the flashback. But her conversation with her brother, I think he was like John Tucker. He might be named
John
after
John Paul. John David.
John Paul. I knew it was a two names. Yeah, John something. John but yeah. He was just like, oh no, she's proud of you. And like he, I don't know. I'm really curious his relationship, you know, mother son versus mother daughter. If he does get the things that she never received, I don't know their birth order, but I found that kind of interesting in terms of just how he was like, oh no, she's proud of you in her own little way. And she's like, are you seeing the same Reba as I am? Because when she looked at the capsule collection and just being like, is that real leather? Oh, that jumpsuit would look terrible on me. Like any little dig that she could get in there. And clearly for someone who is in the mental health field, she never treated herself in terms of how her mother or father treated her. And then you go into her marriage. There's probably a little bit of jealousy that Sutton was closer to her husband than her husband was to her. And like, there's just so many things that I was not expecting the depth to get in this episode and the world that is Sutton struck.
Yeah. And I just wonder for her mom. I mean, before we even get into the Sutton's dad of it all, it's like when you think of mother-daughter relationships, they're so fucking complicated. And if I think of the relationship with my mom, it's like the generations just of our specific relationship, the chapters, the times in which we were really, truly estranged, like long periods of time in which we didn't talk. Like that has happened in a couple waves throughout our adult relationship when I was old enough to make the choice to kind of like detach for a little bit. And, you know, you would know this certainly better than I would being a parent, but like I think as someone who does not have kids, of your kids as an extension of yourself and how difficult that must be when it comes to like identity, relationship, and also accountability. And when I think of Sutton and her mom, I just wonder how Reba views Sutton in relation to herself. Like, Sutton is asking for these things. Is Reba's upset or discomfort, rather, maybe upset's not the right term, is her discomfort with that because she's imagining, sort of as she said, like, well, I don't need this stuff. And since you are part of me, you shouldn't need it too. Like, where do you think that factors?
I mean, listen, I think to me that tells me that Reba isn't ready to unpack all her shit. I did inner child work. I started going to therapy when I was pregnant with my first. I wanted to be a better version of myself, the best version of myself, so I can be the best mom to them. So I had my own shit that I needed to like unpack and look at. So to me, that just tells me that Reba never did the work and just continued her learned behaviors. I mean, we're in the era, like I'm a millennial, we're in the era of gentle parenting, talking about your feelings probably more than ever before, more than that generation is used to. I would imagine my kids are going to be like looking at me, okay, mom, I don't want to talk about my feelings. And they never talked about their feelings. I think about, you know, my parents and how they grew up, and some of it is cultural or not, but I don't feel like it's, I think Reba is smart enough to know that's not just like an extension of her. I think as an adult and as a parent, you're very deliberate in your choices that you make. And I think at this day and age, I just don't buy like, oh, well, that's just how I was and how I was raised. No, it's like you just chose not to do that, which is fine. But you are 80-something-year-old adult. You chose not to give your child that kind of love. And I guarantee she sought it out throughout her entire life, and she just didn't have that maternal energy in her. I don't know, but I don't feel like it's fair to be for her if Reba were to say, you're just like an extension of me, and this is just how it is.
I totally get that, but I also have to say, I mean, this woman is in her 80s. Like, taking outside her work as a clinician, as a therapist, whatever specific focus she has, which I truly just honestly don't know. And apparently Google lies, or I don't, just give me multiple answers so I can understand what's happening. But I think with Reba, I mean, she is in her 80s. Like, the idea that you're in your 80s, surely, not that you're saying this, but like the general idea, you're in your 80s, surely you will have grown. I don't know about you, but that hasn't been my experience. With
no, you're right. I guess what I should say, you're correct. I do think at 80, she is who she is. She's definitely not going to change. I was 32 when I had my first kid. Mm-hmm. I started to make those changes before I had children in my life. So I think as an adult and as a soon to be parent, or if you're thinking about children in your future, I do think the onus is on you whether or not you want to better yourself for your child if you had a disruptive childhood, or one, if you want a childhood that was different than yours. I think the way Reba was raised and her outlook and just being like, well, it is what it is. Like, this is how I was. I survived. I didn't have to seek anything out. Like, so you're correct. I agree with you in that. I think that ship has definitely sailed. And honestly, a little part of me kind of wonders, I don't know what the age cutoff is when you say that ship has sailed. I like to give people the chance to like always have the chance to evolve and change and grow. But I think more often than not, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so appreciative of you sharing what inspired you to go to therapy. I know for me, therapy has been like, this is where I'm probably going to cry for the rest of the episode, so I apologize.
It's okay.
Thank you. For me, therapy has been like really life-saving, and my family has been like experienced a lot of trauma. That didn't rush any of us into therapy. I mean, the irony of my brother's accident was I had, you know, it had been suggested that I go to therapy. I was, you know, a kid, and I had been in two sessions, I think. And then my brother broke his neck and became a quadriplegic, and my parents never took me back because obviously their needs and their focus changed, which I completely understand. Looking back, one could make the argument that would be the perfect time to continue and maybe have some people join, but nobody in my family talking about feelings, validating experiences, taking responsibility and ownership of stuff when it was like feeling private behavior, stuff that like the outside world didn't see, did not happen. It was very much drilled into you, like, stay quiet, don't talk about this stuff. Like, it if you don't talk about it, it didn't happen, which is a great way for a child to like absorb guilt and trauma and everything else. And it really was my dad getting hit by a car, which happened a couple years ago, during which he was diagnosed with cancer, which he recently died from. It was during that period where I was like, oh, this is a 911 for me as far as like mental health. Like, now I'm at the point where I need to talk about this because we're at a point where it's just, there's too much that I've been asked to hold and I can't do it anymore. Which is why I'm so thankful to therapy, because there was someone who was not only able to like help me carry that load, but was like able to say, to validate it, like to say, it's okay. This is a space where it's different from your friends. It's like a very specific, isolated, but in the best possible way, like room in which you can really start to work and process this stuff and understand the importance of taking accountability and responsibility and then bring it outside, you know? And so the conversation around her mom not getting that work, not validating that kind of support for her family and her kids, it's something that I understand. And I wish that my parents had made different choices in many ways, but I also, I figured out a way to make those decisions on my own, noting that my life might have been different had they been made for me in a good way, you know, when I was younger. And I think that's something that It's like not about age for me, it's generations. And there could be somebody my age, 23, with a family and kids who feels the way my parents did, you know, where it's not necessarily like the age in which the trauma happened. It's like the feeling of keeping all of this inside. It's like the magnet between trauma and denial and shock and, I don't know, anger and rage maybe and upset and everything else kind of like wrapped up together. It's a lot to get into. It's the episode was a fucking lot, okay? It was a lot. It was a wild, intense, upsetting ride, and one that I'm really, really grateful for, because I think it did the best kind of thing that Housewives episodes can do, which is to reveal. During this period, Vanessa has excused herself to do parenting, so I just want to thank the Real Moms of Bravo for being real moms of Bravo.
Investing can sometimes feel overwhelming, with all the fancy jargon that makes it seem more complicated than it really is. Maybe all those finance bros just want another thing they can try and mansplain. Well, Acorns believes that anyone can be an investor. That's why they make it so easy to stick to basic, time-tested principles that give your money a chance to grow. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. Investing, for me, felt like something I couldn't start without a substantial amount of money on hand. That's why Acorns is so important. Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing today. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. After the holiday hustle, which I spiritually celebrated at Bluestone Manor, there's nothing like giving your home a little TLC. For me, my decor style is very different throughout my apartment. My living room is really kind of chill, and the clawfice is bright and colorful and fun. And thanks to Wayfair, I was able to find incredible pieces that worked with each individual space in my home. My lighting fixture, which is beautiful, gold, modern, and my air conditioner, necessary when I'm recording an episode where I mention Chris Manzo, is from Wayfair as well. Both of those serve a purpose, but they also look great. I was surprised when I went on Wayfair to see so many necessities, as well as beautiful pieces, lighting, closet organization, spring accents, and more. There's something for every style in every home, no matter your space or budget. Wayfair makes it easy to tackle your New Year's home goals with endless inspiration. They have free and easy delivery, even on the big stuff. Give your home the refresh it needs with Wayfair. Head to wayfair.com right now. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
She's going to be here, but we will be good.
We'll figure it out.
I loved everything you just said. I think, you know, thank you for sharing all of that. I think Andy Girl listeners, you guys are so lucky to have Sarah, who's willing to bare her soul in so many different ways. But I also think, too, like, in terms of how we grew up, we didn't have the world of social media where you realize you weren't alone. We had to live in our thoughts. We had to, you know, you're nervous. You have typical teenage emotions where you can't open up to people. I journaled a lot. That was like my way to kind of get things out. But I mean, I think this kind of, I'm loving everyone today. You hear a little voice. In true parenting fashion, I have a little, my sidekick with us. We have a friend of that's joined a little bit, who's joined Andy's Girls. But I think everything you said, I couldn't have said it better. But I think also just giving ourselves grace to the resources we had. I mean, I think ultimately people do the best with what they have in front of them, right?
Yeah. And I think the hardest thing is to say, like, I need help and I can't provide that for myself, which is why I think just the journey that Sutton is on is so important, because it's just so difficult. It can be really difficult to ask for help. It can also be incredibly challenging to go through that process, you know, be in therapy, whatever assistance, whatever help hopefully works for you, and then confront existing issues in your relationships with your family members who, sidebar, may not have made that same decision, BCC Reba. Like, I wish some of those sessions came with a mirror, but I guess they didn't. So then in that world, you're like, okay, well, I hopefully have developed tools in which to not change this person, but maybe more effectively communicate who I am to them, but also understand that that doesn't, regardless of how they respond, it doesn't change validation and need.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
You know, we're recording. You're a real mom of Bravo. You're literally holding a kiddo home from school. You are the epitome of a woman who works in every possible way, like juggling it all and making it work. Like, the challenge of that as someone who doesn't have kids, but I have shoes and I've heard it's very similar. Is it not?
They don't talk back, though. And you have favorites. It's more acceptable to have favorites.
That's true. I think, you know, what Sutton got into at the end of the episode in like trying to really see her mom. She said something, I think it was in a confessional along the lines of like, or maybe it was in conversation with Garcelle and Kyle, both of whom I thought did a really great job of supporting her, or something along the lines of like, I just want it to be better. I just want us to be better and we can do better, where there's some hope there, obviously. There is an understanding of the work. Like, we don't know. You know, Sutton also talked about like wanting her mom's next chapter to be she's happy, she's stress free. And I'm just thinking, like, I don't know that Reba, this is not me being critical. Like, I don't know that that's realistic for Reba's journey. I don't know that Reba wants that. Like, we can talk about goal setting, be happy, but like your definition of happy versus Reba's definition of happy and maybe feeling safe is her version of happy are probably two pretty different things. But watching Sutton go down that path and also find some healing for herself was really meaningful. I thought it was this is such a weird way to phrase it, but I just thought it was really valuable to her and to us.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the fun side of it, you get to see where she gets all her quirks, especially when it comes to ordering and where she comes across a little bit more demanding. And, you know, where you question how she treats Avi and things, like, you're like, okay, like Garcelle said in her confessional, apple tree.
Literally, it doesn't fall far. And there's something, you know, that was just really, I just felt like that trip was really special. And there were moments where I was laughing, like the cut to Garcelle and Kyle, you know, like listening in was beyond funny. Like, I'm literally taking photos of my phone of them kind of peering in to try to, you know, hear what's going on between Sun and her mom. And then when Avi's running away, there were like a group of ants scampering when Sun went to look for them was another moment. Like, there was definitely levity in the episode during this trip that I thought was great.
Absolutely. What was your perspective on the other side where you have Bose, Dree, and Erica and just kind of unpacking the PK of it all?
I mean, I was surprised. I think for Dorit's gotten maybe a little bit of a pass from me in watching the season because I've been entertained by her. And I wonder, just going off of the previews for next week, I'm like, oh, some of that might be slipping away, where I don't know that I'm going to be as on Dorit's side as I have been. But I was really appreciative for what Erica and Bose were both saying. And there was something that Erica said about PK that I thought was incredible, which is, well, I mean, not if you're Dorit, but like essentially PK, we understand that he's a ruthless person. He's ruthless in business. Why would you think the divorce would be any different?
She was spitting nothing but facts.
What were your thoughts on that exchange?
I think Dorit needs to listen. I would imagine taking the path of least resistance, you know, of course you want to assume the best. I had a friend recently go through a divorce, and it's true. Divorce truly brings out the worst in people. You know, she went in it thinking it's going to be amicable, and she's not a real housewife by any means. But I think more often than not, you have to look for yourself, just how the other person is. And I can't imagine the layer of children in that. I think it's one thing if you didn't have kids and you can just be nasty with each other and then never see each other again. But when you have the level of co-parenting in there, just adds a little different complexities where you do want to see like the father that was familiar or like the PK that was familiar to you. So I have a feeling that she'll eventually get there. I mean, she's revealed a lot about PK that I wasn't expecting this season. So I think she's listening and probably just choosing her words a bit carefully as they kind of navigate their separation.
Yeah, but there was like something to me, I don't know how much of it was her walking back her words versus walking toward maybe a little bit more denial about who PK was. There was like, she was disassociating herself from the quote unquote monster, which is how she's described him previously. Like, you know, he rages. And there was a way that she was talking about it. I don't remember the words exactly, but obviously Bose and Erica both had looks of some combination of like shock and concern, where she's saying in response to them, she says that like, oh, he's been, you know, lovelier to her. And, you know, this isn't about reconciling, but like he's been more caring. And their response is essentially, well, that could be a trick. Like, you should be moving forward, making sure you're taking care of yourself. He might be setting you up for something. And her response back again, something along the lines of like, well, you know, I don't think it's a trick. And that other man wasn't my husband. He's not that person. But I'm thinking to myself, no, the whole problem is he quite literally is that person. PK has multitudes. He didn't have a stand-in send that email to you. He didn't have a stand-in behave in the ways that you've told us he has behind closed doors, which regardless of his relationship with alcohol, he needs to take responsibility for his actions while he was intoxicated and when he was not. Like, that is the same man. You're not divorcing this nice guy saying, you know, calling you and pretending everything's okay. That's actually an indicator things are really not okay if he's working to invalidate your experience by denying that it happened.
1,000%. And listen, that's probably the other man she's probably referring to when he was drunk or whatever he's fighting. We've only heard of alcohol. I'm just going to assume alcohol. But I would imagine that's another version. Abby and I discussed this on our podcast, but we realized that when she joined the show, they had only been married for 1 year. If you recall, like she said, going back to like 2015, I think, and then it's been 10 years with the whole like separation when they were doing like all that math, I immediately like looked in. I'm like, when did they get married? I think they got married in 2015. They would have been filming in 2024. So at the time, 9 years, it would have been coming up 10 years, hence the whole like asset discussion. But I just found that fascinating that she was hardly married, and she's Sarah's fact checking
my mouth
right
is
now.
My mouth is like to the floor right now, but I think that they had been together for a while before they got married.
They were, but I just think that also adds like another interesting layer. I always think, and I'm curious like how encouraging he was of her getting on the show, because I think there's many times where you see husbands who don't want anything to do with their wives and are just like pushing them out. And given their finances and how sketchy they've kind of been, I sometimes wonder if this was like a whole like distraction to like the shit that is going on with his finances. Like, never forget like the Puppygate, like remember Puppygate season, like with the casinos or something with his dad. Then he got like production showed like when he got pulled over and how Dorit covered up for him. And now like, who knows what assets he may or may not have. But I just found that interesting as you kind of unpack everything else.
I mean, it's a great point. I have to wonder, PK is someone who has not shied away from the spotlight. So I don't think, while it absolutely could serve as like a potential distraction for Dorit, I think he wanted it as much as she did. Like, he really seemed to be someone who actively wanted to participate in this, who liked the spoils of it, which arguably you want your partner to support you. It's this weird dance of like not wanting them to want it more than they want a healthy marriage, let's say. You don't want someone who's completely checked out, who doesn't want a film, but just figuring out how to keep your relationship level now that there are so many outside participants in it. And to do that so close to actually having gotten married, that has to be really complicated. I also think, you know, as you mentioned, Dorit has talked about PK getting sober, which certainly we commend, but also that email that was sent to her was sent well after he became sober. So when we're talking about the monster, and quote unquote, that came out when he was drinking, obviously, but it also appears that it happens when he's not. Like, I don't know that Dorit Dorit's sense of denial. It feels like so much of her persona, storyline, however you want to describe it, has been about like waking up. Like she's woken up from her marriage. You could argue she's woken up from her friendship with Kyle in her view of their relationship. And yet there's still this thing that's happening here where I think she really wants him to be, I'm going to be like super on, like a better man than he probably is.
Yeah.
And that
for sure
has to be really tough because you want to be divorcing the nice guy, but that might not be all that he's giving you.
No. And I think of like her kids, like she's doing this all for her kids. But, you know, as it's fascinating kind of watching how she's handled her separation versus Kyle, because I do think she's shown more authenticity, I think, in terms of the roller coaster of emotions. You know, you have grieving, you have like she seemed a bit complacent when she just like in the first episode when she told Erica like outright, we're separating, it's okay. Then she seems, you know, pissed off when she like went off and used the see you next Tuesday multiple times when she was talking to Camille Grammer. Like, I feel like we're just seeing someone going through so many different waves. And I would imagine like she's gotten to kind of the grief of like what's not to be and going into the denial for all the points that you pointed out.
I wonder for your perspective on the moment when Bose and Erica are both just like encouraging her to take a breath for herself. And her response was like, no, you don't understand, making sure, and I'm going to fuck this up, so again, I apologize, but like making sure my kids are okay is my version of taking a breath. Like I take a breath with them. What was your reaction to that?
I feel like, I don't know what Dorit has in terms of like nannies or support. Like, I do think in order for you to take care of your children, you have to be in like a good state of mind yourself. Not everyone has the luxury of that. Sometimes you have to just put your best face forward. I think she's so protective of her kids and so badly wants to shelter them of any bad information that's like allowing her to breathe. Like, they're not, I'm like, barely above water and I can't have them drowning with me. So I need them to be thinking that it's okay. Mommy and daddy are going to be friends. Like, I need them to do that for me to breathe and kind of suffer quietly, which that's kind of how I would interpret it. I mean, I do think she definitely does need to take a breath. I think anyone going through that, I would imagine, like, even, I mean, I guess they do go on cast trips, but it's technically like work for them. But I would hope that if, whether it's her family or nannies or whatever, someone she trusts, that she's at least able to take like a mental health day a little bit just to kind of sit in it, feel it, and then like take your deep breath.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
I also wonder, you know, you've talked about like the different ways that people parent and parenting now versus potentially parenting then. And there are so many different forms of parenting now, but there has been like a lot of banter with all things Gen Z. There have been some, you know, think pieces. This isn't how parenting is always done. Obviously, everyone has like their own journey, but the idea of like wanting to protect your child from challenges and pain. And so I've read the like sort of snarky think pieces about parents calling their kids colleges and like, oh, my, you know, kid doesn't have any friends. Like, will you organize a play date with my college sophomore so that they have someone to hang with? Like, there obviously are, the spectrum is pretty wide. And sometimes what media pieces focus in on is like a very, very, hopefully, you know, more on the extreme part of the spectrum. But I also have to wonder, I mean, Dorit's kids are obviously young. I forget how old they are. I feel like we've been bounced around 10 for Jagger, maybe.
I feel like the oldest, I think they're a bit older. than we think. I think like 10 and 7 or something of that age. I think they're not toddlers, I guess is what I'll say. I know they're not toddler age. They're like grade school age.
Yeah. And obviously every kid is different and has different needs and different communication styles. I just kind of like can't imagine the process of being a parent and understanding the different chapters in like, okay, this is going to be something that is going to adjust my child's life, their relationship potentially with their parents, their understanding of what a family structure is going to look like specific to their own. Certainly, I'm sure they all have friends who have different, whose families look differently. And I just kind of wonder for Dorit about how she goes through that process of like, I cannot save my children from the reality of the situation. I can certainly hide certain aspects of them. She's not calling up Jagger at school and being like, daddy sent a 9-page itemized email. Obviously, there's stuff that her kids aren't going to know about that strangers watching this adult television show are. How you kind of navigate that, like not exposure therapy, obviously, but just like as a parent, just being there to support the child, but also for their own development, understanding that, like, you know, we might have fairy tale books in the playroom, but that is not how life works. And yeah, you are going to have challenges in life and things aren't going to work out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think honesty, if it were me and I were in Dorit's shoes, I feel like honesty and having the right size, age appropriate conversation is better. I know she so badly didn't want to tell them about the divorce. And I'm like, okay, Dorit, like you're not giving your kids enough credit. At that age, they are so aware of everything around them and you're doing them a disservice by treating them like they're 3 when they're 10 or whatever the age is. Like, have that discussion. It's not going to be easy, but it's better for them to hear it from you and know that there's an open line of communication and some honesty there. The rest of it, in terms of like how they react, and to your point, I wouldn't know what to do if I was on a reality TV show where you're asked to be honest about your life, but you're talking poorly about their father. You can shelter them as much as you can until a kid says something. But I think she's just going to have to be ready to have those discussions of when they address it with them and maybe have a resource available to them for someone for them to talk to that isn't mom or dad and has more of a neutral stance.
Yeah. And this is just like a guttural response, but just even thinking about like Dorit and what she's shielding her kids from, and also on a separate point, thinking about PK's probable, you know, upset about the things that Dorit has said about him, my reaction on the latter is just like, I mean, I guess it is like pretty guttural, but like, I just kind of think like, well, then don't treat your estranged wife like shit.
Yeah.
I can just see a universe in which she's probably going to be playing catch up. And some of that might be for herself. Like, I don't want to say these things, or I said these things out of turn and maybe there's more layers. But I'm also thinking he knows you're filming a reality TV show right now. He knows probably the risk involved with your employment futures at that point. And he's not making your life any easier. He's making your life substantially more complicated. He deserves to be shit talked. He deserves to be spoken about, God forbid, honestly, by his estranged wife. Like, he takes, if he doesn't like the way that she talks about him, he should change his behavior.
Clap, clap.
Listen, single Sarah, Chris Manzo, if you're listening, Galentine's Day weekend is upon us. Listen, you know, we talked about Beverly Hills, and I think obviously a huge part of the episode and conversation we've talked around a little bit, but haven't necessarily gone into, which is the obvious trauma, the kind of gaping hole, open wound that was Sutton's dad's death, dying by suicide. As we now know, I think this is new information for me, his wife, Sutton's mom, was home when this happened. I think she said, I watched the first part of the after show. I forget if it was on the episode or the after show, but she said it was like her first day of retirement or something was when this happened. obviously we're talking about really, really heavy subjects, it does also intersect with how Sutton experienced her childhood and how she looks at her mom as a mother, as a parent, but also a wife. Like, that gets into really, really complicated stuff.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was, I was not expecting her to be so vulnerable with her producer. But when she shared, like, she held resentment towards her mom because she allowed, or I don't know. I would assume they made sure their weapons weren't loaded or whatever it may be. Maybe that slipped through the cracks. She didn't provide much more context on that, but how she kind of held resentment there on that. It was not easy to watch. I do think I commend her for just willing to be raw and go there. I do think that family, like, how nice, like, how I couldn't imagine getting the call and be like, so she wants to go see where dad ended her life. Like, that's kind of wild to process, but good on them for letting her unpack that.
I don't know if they knew. Did they? Oh. I don't know that they knew. I think that they knew that she was filming, obviously, a TV show and that it was her childhood house. I don't know that if they knew that that was where her
okay.
dad died.
Well,
I don't know. I could be completely wrong. I also could have missed it if they.
No. I think you're right. That was unaddressed. Well, they definitely know now. But regardless, I just thought in terms of like how she discussed her dad's like mental health and his illness and how he tried to drink. To kind of address it and was in this highly depressive state, which is also fascinating when you know, like, the role her mom plays. And it just goes to show, sadly, you can't, I don't want to say you can't save anyone, but everyone. But it just breaks my heart for her that he was hurting that much that he thought that was the best route to go. And I would assume, you know, given the South and people not talking feelings and men having mental health issues is more accepting today versus probably in his time. So he had to do the best he can with the resources he had. But it definitely breaks my heart for her.
Yeah. And I think that, like, the conversation around suicide is so complicated. The conversation around losing a parent is very complicated. But I think the grief over losing a parent or loved one to suicide, it gets into really sort of tough territory, because you lose a parent or loved one, they die from whatever physical ailment that they might have. And mental health is a physical ailment. I mean, it manifests itself physically, but you don't necessarily carry the societal burden of shame as the people left behind. And it's just so unfortunate. And I think about, like, a recent episode of Andy's Girls, because, you know, as a podcaster, it's like you go through, you do the edit. It's like bajillions of hours on top of the it feels like seconds when we're recording, but like there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes, especially if you're indie gals and if you're, you know, self-producing. And you know, there was a reference made on an episode and we sort of talked around it. And I think it was a guttural thing. I think it's also intended to be respectful when you think, which isn't in and of itself complex, like, who are we being respectful toward? Like, we want to normalize having conversations around mental health and not feel like we're betraying people who might be listening, who might be directly connected to it, but also understanding that there's that additional burden of shame that makes grief all the more challenging to process. And suicide is a thing that has impacted many families. And I'm going to link in show notes to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, which Sutton has done a lot of work in collaboration with. And there's just this thing here that still exists, that still lives. I think it's like, how do you memorialize and honor a person's life without falling into thinking of them solely through their death?
Yeah.
And making sure that you're still honoring and paying respect to their life and grieving. And as you said, like the complications with her mom being home, the complications of Sutton's resentment toward her mom in maybe how the aftermath was handled, which is to say it wasn't. They just all kept her mom telling Sutton the day after her father has died by suicide that she wants crab cakes for a Christmas Eve dinner. And that's also, to add additional complications, like the thing Sutton loved to make with her dad. And she's making her dad's recipe and she remembers like, oh, I burned them. Like, God forbid. There's so much here. And I just look at Reba and I'm like, this woman, we understand a little bit more about Sutton's childhood, young adulthood, relationship with her, but we don't know about Reba's experience as a wife. We have no idea about Reba's marriage. We don't know how Reba looks and thinks of her husband, is certainly differently from flashbacks that we've seen than how Sutton does. Like, it has to be incredibly challenging. And for me myself, having just lost my dad, like, you know, the denial, the grief, the all of it is a lot to take on. That extra burden it's just a lot. It's a lot for people to carry, which is in no way to blame her father. I'm not saying that. I'm just acknowledging the reality of the situation for Sutton, who's now saying, you know, I'm healing. Like, that's just a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. And, you know, he passed in 2002. It's 2025. It's taken her 20 plus years to get to that point. And needless to say, I have not had a loss as close as that. But I can imagine, you know, some days are better than others. And hopefully she can put, to your point, in terms of people who take their lives, hopefully that aspect of how he passed has now been unpacked for her, where she feels like at peace at that because she went to where he was, but now maybe can focus on the man that she misses, which she touches on a bit in that episode of, you know, how he showed an affinity to her. He may not have said much, but they'd like cook together and all those things. It was hard. It was hard, but I'm proud of her for doing it and for allowing us to even talk about it and watch it. You know, that's such a hard thing. I don't know that I would want cameras around.
Totally. And for Sutton, she's 20 years in and it feels like she's just beginning. I mean, she says on the after show, and again, I only watched part one, but I think that was the part that focused on Sutton. You know, she talks about wanting to have a sort of, not necessarily a final conversation with her mom, but she's like, I want to go through that day. I want to go through the day in which she died by suicide. Like, and really just have that kind of conversation. I don't know if her mom is going to be open to it. Her mom and some of her mom's reactions, I think, are similar on camera than off. I would give her mom the grace of hoping that she would be maybe more open off camera, but it might actually be the opposite, that some of this stuff she doesn't shut down as quickly because there are cameras there. I have no idea. It's just a genuine interpretation. But like, even the conversation around suicide, I think the language is really important. Like to say like he died by suicide, that the taking away, it is something that I often say just because it's like the history of it. But the language has changed, which I think is also connected to a reconditioning around conversations with like mental health and suicide prevention, but also just kind of talking about it in a way that hopefully, I don't know, it just is maybe more connective than it has been before. Because again, the shame, it's like the intent certainly isn't there in conversations for people who are closely connected to it to experience shame, but that might happen anyway, you know?
I do think too, and I wish this for Sutton, but I think given everything you and I have discussed about Reba and not changing and she's 80, I do hope for Sutton that she finds peace on things without her mom. I don't, like you said, I don't know that her mom is going to give that to her. And she needs to be able to find closure. I don't know that you can find complete closure, but at least be at peace with yourself without your mom being a part of that, which I know would be like a tough pill to swallow. And that probably has to unpack her mom issues. But I just don't know, to your point and things that we talked about, how she seemed very idealistic about their relationship going forward, that the reality of those things happening and the reality of her mom being having the space, holding space for her for that is probably not going to happen. So I hope for her that she's able to, one, be at peace of who her mom is, right? Like, just be at peace with that. To kind of unpack those feelings and sit in it and be raw, however that looks like for her. And three, like, you know, memorialize her dad in the way that feels best to her.
Yeah. And I think her going to the house was a part of that, was like, this house is where he died. So you're carrying that with you, the memory, but also there's so much that happened there. He was a fuller person. Than that it includes, she's not negating or denying what happened. And I also appreciate that she wasn't denying her feelings in that moment, like, feel how you feel. But it also felt, there was something about it that was so wrenching and so upsetting. And I felt for her, and again, sobbing, sob. But also, like, I could feel her sort of turning the page, and I hope for her mom the same, but it's up to her mom. The irony, her mom knows that there are tools available. She might decide that they are not, she's not, she doesn't need or want them. But the other thing that I think is really kind of interesting, and you hear this in conversations with, you know, people who make the decision to have kids, and I've experienced this as someone who's made the decision not to, but it is like, I am parenting myself and sometimes other people in the ways that I didn't have when I was younger.
Nailed it.
Right? This isn't like the venue to get into any of that, because it's truly nobody's business. But I did have a conversation with someone where, you know, we had a very challenging, calm, honest conversation about some stuff that I've gone through. And I said at the end of the day, like, I am being the parent to myself and to the person that I was talking to that I didn't have when I was younger. Like, I didn't have a safe space. Like, I didn't have, in, you know, difficult environments, someone to protect me. And like, that for me, like, after that conversation, I remember therapy with my psychiatrist, and she was like, yes, like, snaps to the microphone that you probably can't see or hear because of audio. But like, that's the thing, is that you don't, while it's beautiful to make the decision to have kids, and I, you know, have, you know, friends and loved ones who have stopped that intergenerational trauma, who've been like, I am going to be the parent to my kids that I wish I had. Which isn't to demonize anyone, but it is also to be honest. I'm doing that for myself and people in my world. Like, I, you know, love kids, former retired nanny, but I've chosen not to have them to this point. And also, there are takeaways that I can implement in my life that don't involve having kids, but involve being that kind of caregiver, which I think is really meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, listen, as someone who has two kids of my own, I think it's great to have that self-awareness. The end of the day, you shouldn't do things because you feel like society wants you to do things. You do it what feels right for you. And I think that speaks to all the work that you've done for yourself. So I commend you for that.
Thank you. Again, Christopher Manzo, Monsieur Pedro Pascal. If any of you want to knock on my door, we can pick up some conversations. But until then, listen, actually, that does sort of connect before we skedaddle that on this very light, funny episode.
Very light.
Very light, where I've cried literally 16 times. There was a convo I thought was really fascinating between Bose and her daughter. And it, to me, actually kind of like completes the circle. Now, her daughter is a tweenager. I don't know. She's like 12. I don't know how old kids
are. I think she's older than that. My perspective is that she said, "I'm about to be out of the house." I think she said something along. No, but I think she said something along those lines, okay, to where she was at peace with the conversation they had, like okay with it, accepting of it. I could have misheard that. I have a track record for that. So, but that's how I recall.
For me, sometimes I'm like, "Are you three?" And the person's like, "I'm 11." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool. Kadoos." So they're having a conversation. Obviously, Bose is saying, "Is this something that you would be open to if I make the decision to have another kid, if I'm able to have another kid?" And her daughter, with the emotional intelligence and maturity that, frankly, I don't think I would have now, let alone when I was her age, whatever age she is, wonderful, beautiful child, saying, like, we have a bond and that bond is changing. Like, our relationship is changing as I get older. So, yeah, like, have that with someone else, bring someone else into the family, create a new life. Like, for her to note that while noting her relationship with her mom is changing and Bose being like, "What the fuck is happening?" was incredible.
Yeah. Well, that's a testament to Bose's parenting. And like, they went through the loss of her father, her ex-husband. You know, he went through an illness. I'm sure she had to mature fairly quickly. And they probably had a lot of raw conversations that weren't just surface level, to where she did have the wherewithal for that. But yeah, I'm not convinced it's going to happen for not, sorry. I'm not convinced it's going to happen for Bose, not because she couldn't make it happen, just because I don't know that I trust the guy she's with personally. He gives me TJ vibes, Potomac TJ vibes a little bit, not to the full degree, but like he gives me the ick. And the whole discussion regarding like the I love you thing, and I'm with Erica there. I'm like, should you be having discussions about having a baby when you're having a discussion with us on whether or not he loves you or he's going to say it first? Just a lot of red flags for me.
Yeah, I think a child can be like one of the biggest expressions of love, but that doesn't necessarily mean you should skip over like, love ya. Okay, welcome, baby. Like, I think Bose gets that. I also, though, was surprised, but also just need to say, like, comparing anyone to TJ is the biggest possible insult, because that man is such an insecure,
I know,
unfuckable, genuinely piece of shit. Like, he radiates the ick factor. So I am so thankful to you for saying that, because Stacy deserves so much more.
Of course. And then, listen, I will gladly fight any of you in the DM, my DMs. I'm joking. He just has given me the egg on his like few times on camera. It's not to the degree of TJ, but it's similar in the same like spectrum for me. A little bit of ickiness. And I don't know. I don't trust him. He doesn't seems a little like too, I don't know. I'm not trusting of him.
Is it possible that some of that is happening? And please feel free to tell me to shut the fuck up. Is it possible that some of that is happening because he was sort of introduced as a, you know, I'm just kind of like seeing this person and we'll see what happens. And then we skipped a little bit forward into these really, you know, focused on commitment discussions of whether or not they're going to have kids. Did that factor at all? Or
I mean, I guess so, a little bit. But she was given to me like Gwyneth Paltrow, her husband, like vibes of initially when she was talking about him, in the sense of living separately. We come together when we want. And I just don't see her. I think she's had her own space for so long that I can't imagine her having that type of relationship in that way. But he in general just kind of gave me the ick, like on camera. I don't know. When he ordered, I didn't even know you can order a steak medium plus. I had to look that up when he ordered it. I was like, I'm glad he didn't say well done. But I don't know. It must be a me thing. But he just gave me the ick.
Wait, not to focus on the steak of it all, obviously the most important thing coming out of this episode, but like, isn't that medium well?
Yeah, but I just have never heard it referred that way. So maybe that also is like, why don't you just say medium? I don't know. Say medium well. Why are you saying medium plus? Like, what does that mean? Just say medium well. Medium, medium well, medium rare. Like, just say it the right way. I don't know. But that's my hot take. That's my hot take.
I love that. I'm going to be thinking about that for the rest of the day. I really am.
Please do. Please do.
Listen, this has been such a journey. I'm so appreciative for you coming on the podcast. There is something that I do want to mention before we wrap, because news broke literally right before we sat down to record. Teddy shared in a statement that she is undergoing brain surgery after multiple tumors were found on her brain. She posted on Instagram, "For the last several weeks, I've been dealing with severe and debilitating headaches. Yesterday, the pain was unbearable and required hospitalization. After a CT scan and MRI, doctors found multiple tumors on my brain, which they believe have been growing for at least 6 months. Two of the tumors will be surgically removed today. The remaining smaller tumors will be dealt with via radiation at a later date. I'm blessed to be surrounded by my children, family, friends, doctors, nurses, and surgeons who are doing everything possible to get me back into better health. Thank you to everybody who has reached out and to everyone who has supported me along this journey." She posted that truly right before we were about to start recording. And, you know, AGs well know my relationship to Teddy. She has long been a trigger housewife for me. I have really said a bunch of stuff about her on the podcast. I absolutely hope for the best for her in this really upsetting update on her life and her health. And it is entirely possible, and I would argue incredibly imperative and important, to hold multiple truths, which is, for me just personally, I don't fuck with Teddy as a housewife or business person. And I absolutely am so sad for her and her family. And as someone who's recently lost a loved one due to cancer, we don't know what Teddy's future looks for her. I certainly hope that these tumors are not malignant. I certainly hope that the surgery and radiation are successful. I would just, you know, when we have conversations around housewives, oftentimes really impassioned ones, very oftentimes for good reason, it's also important for us to acknowledge that at the end of the day, you know, for Teddy as a person in this universe, as a, you know, wife, or actually, well, her process, going through what she's going through with what's-his-face, but like as a mom and as a daughter, as her own individual person, I would never wish for any kind of update on her medical journey as she has just shared. And so I just hope for the best for her. And I hope that that really is as clear as I can possibly be to AGs. And I also did just want to share it because it's big news coming from the Bravo universe. And I don't even know, is she still living with Kyle? I actually don't know what's happening.
I don't know her living situation, but it's terrifying. And I, you know, even that she shared that, like, she didn't owe any of us this information, as she's kind of probably unpacking all of those emotions. She'd been so candid and transparent with her melanoma and that journey that she went on for her. So I have nothing but love, sending her so much love and her little ones.
I don't even know if AGs will know, because I don't know if we really mentioned it during the recording, but your kiddo is at home at points during this recording. You're recording, holding your child like that. You are a Renaissance woman in every sense of the word. And I am so appreciative and thankful for you coming back on, and just wanted to say thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. I always love unpacking things with you, Sarah, because you opened my mind and perspective to things that I don't always think about. So it's always a pleasure to be on Andy's Girls.
It's a pleasure to have you. Can you tell the AGs where they can follow you on social, listen to the podcast, mention it all?
Of course. You can listen to me wherever you're listening to this podcast, at Real Moms of Bravo. We release episodes a few times a week, depending on how many shows there are out. Our schedule changes, but we have plenty of episodes out there for you to listen, me and my co-host Abby. And then you can follow us on Instagram at Real Moms of Bravo. We sometimes TikTok. not very often, but the main source, the main good stuff you can all find on Instagram, Real Moms of Bravo.
And I'm also just want to extend, you know, I'm so sorry for, you know, as a, I think Chiefs person.
Right? Yeah, I have my Chiefs shirt on. Yep,
oh, I know. It. You're wearing it. Been a tough, maybe a tough week.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal. It was really shitty. They played horribly. The Eagles, I tip my hat to you, Eagles fans listening. It's well-deserved. Happy for Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, Abbott Elementary. they played like shit. They played horribly. And I'm so glad, though, at least it wasn't a shutout. But it was, I feel like a lot of us in Kansas City or Red Kingdom, as we called ourselves, are processing how it was that bad. I don't think any of us saw that coming. So. But thank you for your condolences.
You know what? My absolute pleasure. And I haven't watched their podcast before in full, I don't think, but I've seen a bunch of their clips, like the Kelsey brothers.
They're yeah.
Huge smash hit pod, New Heights. I watched their episode out today where they get into the nitty gritty and how Jason feels as a former Phillies player and comes from the Phillies universe and is at the stadium watching his brother chase, you know, his dream and just like juggling about a lot of complicated feelings on top of each other. It's a really great episode. I love both. I have to tell you, I love both of the Kelsey brothers. I really genuinely do. And I love Kylie Kelsey as well as watching one of her. I had a Kelsey day today. And it is maybe, you know, for Chiefs folks, it might be a goodie to watch. For Phillies people, it might be a goodie to watch. It was for me as an outsider in the world of sports. It was something I found entertaining.
I mean, the fact that you found that entertaining, you're not like invested in either verse, that speaks to them on making it interesting and entertaining. So I will definitely check it out. I've seen clips as well.
Yeah, not to add salt to the wound here, but my sort of takeaway from that and from Kylie's interview on Call Her Daddy was like, I was like, oh, am I maybe a, I might be, if I was to care about sports, which maybe I'll do, maybe, I don't know, whatever. Phillies, I mean, they just seem fun. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
I mean, we could have ended this without me knowing this, Sarah. But you know what? Still love ya. I, you know, see you next year then. She's like a new Phillies fan. We'll see you on the field.
I'm ready for it. I might go to a sports bar at some point. I don't know. It's good for me to
love that journey for you. Love this journey for you.
It's good for me to like be curious about football right as the season ends, where I'm like, oh wait, maybe I would do another game if they want to do a follow-up or something. I'm here for it. Listen, you know what else I'm here for? AG's following me on Instagram at Dame Galley. You can sign up for the AG Patreon, number one way to support the pod, get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more at patreon.com/andysgirls, and DM me on Instagram your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, also known as satchels of gold. They might be included in an upcoming Patreon episode. Please include your first name and town. Vanessa, thank you so much for coming back. This was a total pleasure.
Thank you. Of course. Loved it. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And again, some resources for NAMI, NAMI, are in the show notes for this episode. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Save big money on your next upgrade now at Menards. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. With over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from, Mohawk Tile provides long-lasting charm in any space. Visit the store and Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on in our weekly flyer. Save big money.